The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on Trumpet Radio, or kpcg.fm online, over the air on 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel. The sun is shining over here. The city is excited as it gets ready for the start of the Jewish New Year next week, the celebration of Rosh Hashanah, or the Feast of Trumpets. Stephen Flurry asked me, Brent Nachtigall, to take today's program for him, which works out pretty well for a Monday since the work week begins over here on a Sunday morning instead of a Monday morning, which gives you or me, in this case, a little bit of extra time to prepare. And that's something we are actually going to leverage in the future, as we're going to try and release a new program on KPCG soon entitled Watch Jerusalem. It'll be an hour-long broadcast, which will be played on Sunday back in Edmond, Oklahoma, and however that works out in the stream around the world. The program Watch Jerusalem will focus on news from Israel and concerning Israel. And it's also going to have a heavy focus on archaeology as well, of the land of Israel. So we're excited to start bringing that to you soon, and we'll sure let you know when that will begin. Well, as many of you know, if you've heard me talk before on the program, I like to talk a little bit about my daughter Adelaide. She's about 4 months old right now, and she already has a passport. In order to travel out of the country, she has to have that, regardless of how old she is. And being that my wife is an American, we have an American passport for her. However, it's interesting because for the place of birth on her passport, it doesn't have a country. It doesn't have a country, though she was born here in Jerusalem in a hospital in Israel. Instead, the country of birth for this four-month-old American citizen is Jerusalem, Jerusalem, not Jerusalem, Israel. Now, you might have heard about this policy of the United States. It is official policy not to recognize Jerusalem as solely Israeli territory, and thus the United States refuses to put Jerusalem, Israel, on passports of American citizens born in Jerusalem. However, with news this week, that looks like it is about to change. Possibly. At least it's stated that that might change. As many of you probably know, yesterday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel was beginning to wind down his trip to the United States. He met with both the Republican, Democratic, and Democratic nominees to be the next president of the United States. Last night, he held a meeting with Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. It was an hour-long meeting in a New York's W Hotel. In that, at least the reports that have come out from it was a closed-door meeting. There were a number of things discussed, obviously the security concerns of Israel, one of the foremost of those. The Clinton campaign came out with a statement after that meeting and said that it was an in-depth conversation. She stressed that a strong and secure Israel is vital to the United States and reaffirmed unwavering commitment to the relationship. And then according to her campaign as well, Clinton stressed in the meeting that she supported the recent 10-year, $38 billion military package that was signed between the two countries, Israel and America, early, I think that was about 2 weeks ago. And she talked about how she also would step up her attacks against one-sided UN votes against Israel. Now, if you haven't heard Mr. Netanyahu's speech to the UN from last week, I would go and do that. He does call out the UN for their increasing bias against the Jewish state. It's something that is absolutely unbelievable. If you listen to some of his statistics, I was going to play some of that today on the program, but we just don't have time because I believe there's just some more important matters to discuss. And namely, that it is the more important matter is the other meeting that Mr. Netanyahu was involved in on Sunday. And that was the meeting between Mr. Netanyahu and Republican nominee Mr. Donald Trump. Now, the rumor is that it was actually Mr. Trump that requested for a meeting with Mr. Netanyahu first, and then Netanyahu only accepted that meeting with Mr. Trump after Mr. Netanyahu reached out to the Clinton campaign, and they accepted a meeting in order for this not to appear biased, that Mr. Netanyahu was wanting to just meet the Republican. He said, no meeting with the Republican candidate unless I get to meet with the Democratic candidate as well. And so that's what happened. Nevertheless, even though Mrs. Clinton did sound pretty supportive of Israel, it seems that Mr. Trump's positions vis-a-vis Israel are more supportive. This is what Mr. Trump had to say about Mr. Netanyahu back in 2013. This was at the time when the Israeli election was in full swing and Mr. Netanyahu was a candidate.
My name is Donald Trump and I'm a big fan of Israel. And frankly, a strong prime minister is a strong Israel. And you truly have a great prime minister. In Benjamin Netanyahu, there's nobody like him. He's a winner. He's highly respected. He's highly thought of by all. And people really do have great, great respect for what's happened in Israel. So vote for Benjamin. Terrific guy, terrific leader, great for Israel.
So obviously, Mr. Trump is a great fan of Mr. Netanyahu and has been for a long time. So there's no real surprises that he wanted to reach out to the prime minister as he was visiting and to ensure that he could succinctly describe to him what he thought his policy was going to be towards Israel. Now, so what did he say? What came out of this meeting? Well, again, this was a closed-door meeting, so we only have reports that came from it, from the campaign themselves. And the most widely reported announcement to come out of that meeting is that Mr. Trump agreed to move the embassy, the American embassy, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, a way of recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and something that might allow American children who were born in Israel, like my daughter, to actually have an Israel written on their passport, Jerusalem, Israel. Now, before we get too excited about that proposition, it's good to remember that this promise has been made before, actually many times. Even towards the end of 1995, the House of Representatives in America voted 374-37 in favor of moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem by mid-1999. They put a date on it. The Senate then passed the measure by a vote of 93-5, and even though President Bill Clinton was against the move and never followed through on it, the vote nevertheless signified overwhelming American support, not only for Jerusalem to remain under Jewish control, but to serve as Israel's capital, something the international community had really never recognized. Now, Mr. Netanyahu, he was prime minister before, and on July 10, back in 1996, he spoke to Congress, before Congress, and he thanked the legislators for their vote to relocate the embassy, and Congress gave him a standing ovation after he dismissed Palestinian claims for control over Jerusalem. And he said Jerusalem will never be redivided. Jerusalem assured his receptive audience, quote, "We shall not allow a Berlin to be erected inside Jerusalem." Like I said, Congress passed that law calling for the embassy to be moved by 1999. But presidents of both parties since that time, since the vote, have waived the requirement. Mr. George W. Bush, a Republican, promised in the start of 2000, to start the move as soon as he took office, and yet he didn't. And Mr. Clinton before him didn't move it, even though it was signed into law by Congress and the Senate. So we'll see what happens if Mr. Trump is made president, whether he follows through on that. We'll see. Well, according to the Trump campaign readout after the meeting, this is what he said about that idea and that concept. According to their campaign, quote, Mr. Trump acknowledged that Jerusalem has been the eternal capital of the Jewish people for 3,000 years, and that the United States, under a Trump administration, will finally accept the long-standing congressional mandate to recognize Jerusalem as the undivided capital of the state of Israel. Sounds good, but will it happen? Will it happen? Will Mr. Trump be good for Israel if he is made president? Now, that's the number one question on Israelis' minds when an American election takes place. They're the greatest ally that they've had for the past 50 years, even though there have been bumps along the way, of course. Is this candidate good for Israel? That is what they're most concerned about. Mr. Donald Trump seems like he'll be good for Israel. That's what he says. But will it happen? We'll answer that question a little bit later on the program. Also, overnight, there's a video that surfaced from a closed-door meeting from about 2 weeks ago of one of the masterminds of Mr. Trump's Israel policy. His name is David Friedman. And so this was about 2 weeks ago. He describes Israel's, the Trump campaign's views on Israel, and even goes into the Republican platform, what it has to say about Israel. And I'd like for you to have a listen to just see how glowing he is of what Mr. Trump plans to do. Now, please excuse the recording. It was made over the clunky sounds of a kosher meal. Take a listen.
And just so you know, and this, I think, this is important just in terms of how his policies are developed. Here's a policy committee, which you have to, anything, whether it's jobs or national security, the economy, immigration, everything is vetted through a policy committee. With regard to Israel, there really isn't a policy committee. Our relationship is so strong that on matters of Israel, he's really given Jason and I really full authority to speak on his behalf. The one thing that I'm proudest about so to date is the Republican platform as it relates to the state of Israel. The Republican platform on Israel is the strongest platform with regard to Israel that either party has ever developed in the history of this country.
He's saying that the Republican platform that he helped pen or mastermind, and he is one of Trump's Israel policy guys, he says it is the most supportive platform of any party in the history of the United States regarding Israel. So they're expecting, if Mr. Trump becomes president of the United States, that the relationship between the state of Israel and America is going to flourish in a way we have never seen before. But is that really going to take place? We'll continue with David Friedman, again, mastermind of Trump's Israel policy.
With Donald Trump, there is an opportunity for the first time in the history of this country to have a relationship between the United States and Israel, where Israel is no longer treated as a client state, where it's no longer, you know, we're giving you X dollars and this is what we expect in return. It's much more in the nature of a partnership, where we are both on the front lines, Israel frankly more than the United States, in a joint battle against radical Islamism. And in that context, the last thing the United States should want is for Israel to be weakened.
Again, sounds good, but will it happen? Will a Trump victory in the presidential elections in November be good for Israel? Would a Hillary Clinton victory be better? Now, this is what the Trump campaign said after the 1 hour and 20 minute long meeting. Again, the press was barred from it, but this is what their campaign released in a statement. They said, for the men who have known each other for years discussed many topics important to both countries, including the special relationship between America and Israel and the unbreakable bond between the two countries. Now, we should ask, is the bond between America and Israel unbreakable? Is it? Is it possible to break that bond between these two countries. The Trump campaign says that if they're in power, that bond will be firm. It's going to continue. It's going to be unbreakable. But again, we'll have to see what takes place. Now, it's beyond dispute that the relationship between America and Israel has suffered immensely over the past 7.5 years. The last 7.5 years, they should prove, really, that the alliance is most definitely breakable, and that historically strong alliance has been ravaged. And if you want more information about that, you can request the booklet America Under Attack from thetrumpet.com, America Under Attack. But to just recap quickly what's happened over the past seven years, as President Barack Obama has been in power, since 2009, Mr. Obama, he's compared Israel's treatment of the Palestinians to Germany's extermination of Jews during the Holocaust. He rejected the legitimacy of Jewish settlements. He demanded that Jews stop building in all lands claimed by Palestinians. And he insisted that Israel apologize to its attackers after the Turkish flotilla incident, if you remember that. Then in March 2010, President Obama admitted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House, but not through the front door. He herded him through the side door under the cover of darkness, not allowing any photos to be taken. That was a bit of a slap in the face to Mr. Netanyahu. Then in May of 2010 at the United Nations, the U.S. delegation broke a long-standing U.S.-Israeli agreement and endorsed a U.N. resolution calling on Israel to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Then in May 2011, President Obama publicly stated that Israel should return to the indefensible armistice lines from 1967, marking a significant shift in policy towards Israel of the United States again. Then in 2010, with during a visit with Mr. Obama, Mr. Netanyahu was handed a list of 13 demands. And when he didn't immediately accept them, the president literally walked out on him from that meeting. In September 2012, on another visit to America, Netanyahu requested a meeting with the president, who refused. And Reuters recognized that as a highly unusual rebuff for such a close ally. Then when President Obama visited Israel in March 2013, he remarked that Israel had no greater friend than America, which made a lot of people ask why it took more than 4 years for the President of the United States to get around to actually visiting Israel. During that visit, this so-called great friend refused to address Israel's elected leaders in the Knesset and chose instead to address a hand-picked audience of left-wing university students. So if Israel has had no greater friend than America, the situation as it stands right now at the end of the Obama administration, that situation is desperate. This is what U.S.-born Israeli journalist and writer Carolyn Glick said about the relationship between President Obama and Israel. She said, quote, "He wants to hurt Israel. He does not like Israel. He is appointing anti-Israel advisors and cabinet ministers, cabinet members, not despite their anti-Israel positions, but because of them. Obama wants to fundamentally transform the U.S. relationship with Israel." And that was written 3 or 4 years ago. And that relationship has been transformed. But we're asking the question today, what about the time after President Obama? What then about that relationship? Will we see a resurgence of the brotherhood, the bond between the two states, that is going to eclipse any type of close relationship from the past? That's what the Trump campaign would have you believe. Now, interestingly enough, the Bible itself is not silent on the fate of the American-Israeli alliance. The Bible has an answer for us. The Bible will tell us, whether it's Mr. Trump or whether it's Mrs. Clinton as the next president of the United States, whether that alliance will return to be strong or whether it'll continue to crumble. When we come back, we'll look and examine this question of Israel's future relationship with the United States through the clear light of both Bible history and Bible prophecy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Brenton Uchtigal, again filling in for Stephen Fleury. And before the break, we were discussing the bold statements of both American presidential nominees in regard to their support of Israel. And we said right at the end there that we're going to look into the Bible to see what the Bible says of this alliance and what it actually prophesies of this future alliance between America and Israel. Now, if we're going to understand what the Bible says about this alliance between the United States and Israel, we need to know who these people are or who these nations are in the Bible. What are they known by? What is their name? What name can we read in the scriptures and say that that is a prophecy specifically for the United States or for Israel? Now, Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, which went into the homes of more than 5 million people, is called The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and that proves that the United States is the biblical tribe of Manasseh, one of the lost 10 tribes, and that Israel today, the little tiny nation of Israel, is predominantly made up of the tribe of Judah. So that book also talks about how Ephraim and Manasseh, two of those tribes from the Lost Ten Tribes in the north, the Northern Kingdom, they also receive the name of their grandfather Israel upon them. They did, specifically, those two tribes. So when the Bible refers to Israel in prophecy, it does not refer to the tribes of the Southern Kingdom of Judah. It doesn't refer to the Jews. Therefore, today, it doesn't refer to the political entity known as Israel today. But rather, when the Bible refers to Israel in prophecy, it is talking about those birthright nations that had the name of their grandfather Israel placed upon them, that being Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, again, please read the United States and Britain in Prophecy for all of this background. We don't have time to get into it today. It's free. You can get it at thetrumpet.com. You can order a hard copy, PDF, EPUB, anything, any version you want you can get. You can read it right there on the site as well. But it is quite a document. It's quite long. But again, it's going to clear up who is the United States and Britain in prophecy and who is Israel today. Or the political entity Israel today. So if we'll answer this question by looking at Bible history for one, whether the United States and Israel or Judah and Manasseh, if we could say that, whether they, even though they are brothers, they're both sons of grandson of Israel, and then a son of Israel, since they're brothers, shouldn't they get along and retain such an unbreakable bond? What were they like in the Old Testament, these two tribes? Did they always get along? Was there always a strong bond between them? Well, Bible history reveals that that's not always the case, that though they were part of the same nation at times, they were often divided. These relatives were often divided. In fact, most of the time, they were actually divided, anciently. Now, we're going to go to a specific chapter in the book of second book of Kings, chapters 15 to 17. They're amazing. They talk about the demise of the northern 10 tribes of Israel. These were one kingdom that was in northern Israel. They separated from the southern tribes of Judah, or rather, they separated from Israel proper after the death of Solomon, King Solomon. And then there were two nations. Throughout the rest of their existences after Solomon, they were two nations for hundreds of years. We tend to think of Israel and Judah being united often, and in some cases they were united. But more often than not in the Bible, they were not united. In fact, it was more natural for them to become disunited and to not have unbreakable bonds between them. And in this case that we'll look at right now in 2 Kings chapter 16, they actually fought against one another. Fought against, armed against each other. Israel and Judah. And Israel again, that contained that tribe of Manasseh in the north. Now these chapters, chapter 15 to 17, they take place in the latter half of the 8th century BC. Assyria is the rising empire of the day and was about to venture westward into Egypt with the land of Israel and Judah on his way. But let's notice this. I'm going to start in 2 Kings chapter 16 and read verse 1 through 8. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. So it's talking here of the two different kingdoms, Israel in the north, again made up of Ephraim, Manasseh, and the other eight tribes, and Judah in the south. You have this man named Pekah, son of Remaliah, as king of those northern tribes, and Ahaz, son of Jotham, being king of the tribe of Judah. And it says 20 years old was Ahaz, that is the king of Judah, when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and he did not that which was right in the sight of the Eternal, his God, like David his father, but he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like those kings in the north, those kings of Israel, yea, and made his son to pass through the fire according to the abomination of the heathen, whom the Eternal cast out from before the children of Israel. And he, Ahaz, sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. So this Ahaz, king of Judah, was not a righteous individual at all. His father was more righteous, and then his son is going to be more righteous, his son being Hezekiah. Yet during this reign of Ahaz, we have Israel or Judah turning to wickedness. Israel in the north, they were already quite unrighteous. They'd never had a righteous king. They'd never turned away from idolatry. But notice what happens here in this geopolitical scene involving a time when Judah's unrighteous, Israel's unrighteous. What happens? Verse 5, then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war. And they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. So you have these two kings, king of Israel, Pekah, in league with the king of Syria to Israel's east, coming to fight and besiege against Judah. This doesn't seem like an unbreakable bond between these family relations. In fact, Israel was finding allies to fight against Judah. Verse 6, and at that time, Rezin, king of Syria, recovered Eilat to Syria and drove the Jews from Eilat, and the Syrians came to Eilat and dwelt there unto this day. So again, you have this situation where Israel is allied with Syria against Judah, against their family relation. So what does Judah do at this time? Faced with the bigger nation of Israel to the north, besieging it in league with the Syrians to the east, northeast. And then other scriptures about this same time talks about how Edom to the southeast was actually allied against Judah as well, feeling backed into a corner because of their broken brotherhood between Israel and itself, Israel and Judah. They were backed into a corner, and who did they turn to for help? Verse 7. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria this time, saying, I am your servant and your son. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Syria and out of the hand of the king of Israel, which rises up against me. So he's calling out to this large empire that's growing in Mesopotamia, northern Mesopotamia, and saying, I'm besieged right now. My family member, Israel, that the nation that I was once aligned with, have come out against me. And they're calling out. Ahaz is calling out for Assyria to come and help him fight and defend himself against his own family. Verse 8, and Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of the Eternal and in the treasures of the king's house and sent it for a present to the king of Assyria. Now, the ancient Near Eastern text 282, this mentions this exact event, Ahaz bringing tribute to Tiglath-Pileser to bribe him to helping him fight against Israel. The Jews were fighting against Israel. They're not one and the same people anciently, and they're not one and the same people today. And honest Jewish scholars would even admit that. Verse 9, the king of Assyria hearkened unto him, that is Ahaz, for the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and took it and carried the people away captive to Kir and slew Rezin. And King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser of Assyria and saw an altar that was at Damascus, and he wanted to copy the altar, and he brought up his architect from Jerusalem to copy the altar so that when he went back down to Jerusalem, he could build the same altar that was built there in Damascus. But he was real buddy-buddy here with the Assyrians at the expense and because of the broken relationship that he had with Israel. Now, again, that's Bible history. Israel did, Ephraim, Manasseh, the other eight tribes, they made up this Israel that was warring against Judah or the Jews. We could call them, and is even the King James Version, and even the Hebrew in verse 6 calls them the Jews. Israel was fighting against the Jews. That bond has not always been unbreakable. So there's a look at Bible history to show that they did fight against one another and multiple times. This isn't the only example. And furthermore, it's the most powerful example, though, because what happened? We're at the end of the 8th century BC here, and Judah calls in Assyria for help to fight against or to defend against Israel, his family member. And it turns out that when Assyria comes down and takes Damascus, then they also take the eastern tribes, Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh, the eastern tribes on the other side of the Jordan River. They go into captivity at precisely this time, anciently. And then there's going to be another couple of waves. Different Assyrian kings will come down. And in the space of 20 years, all of Israel will be going into captivity. And they will become, shortly thereafter, the Lost Ten Tribes. The Lost Ten Tribes, until their identity was revealed in the end time, who they were, so that we can understand Bible prophecy, so that when we read Israel in the Bible today in prophecy, we know who it's referring to. And again, it refers primarily to America, the United States, and Britain. And please request United States and Britain in prophecy to prove that. Okay, so we've looked at an example in history of how this relationship has faltered in the past. Let's see what prophecy says about how this relationship is going to end up. You can turn over, if you have your Bible, to Zechariah chapter 11 and verse 14. Now, as we read this prophecy, we need to realize that it's not going to say Donald Trump is going to be elected president and he is going to be bad for Israel. It doesn't say Hillary Clinton is going to be elected and she will be bad for Israel. That is the Jewish state today. But notice what it does say. It says, verse 14, "Then I cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, that I may break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel." There is going to be a broken brotherhood between Judah and Israel in the end time. Notice this is for our time. This wasn't fulfilled anciently. How do we know? For one, we know Zechariah is an end time book. It says that a number of places in that day. It was obviously end time language. But then also just logic tells us this book of Zechariah was written around 520 BC onwards, 200 years after Israel had ceased to exist as a nation. Israel didn't even exist anymore as a nation when Zechariah gave this prophecy. And he said that the brotherhood or the bands, the brotherhood between Judah and Israel will be broken. And obviously, if it was for his day, everyone would be saying, well, where's Israel? I mean, they left their land 200 years ago. Obviously, this must be about a future nation or nations of Israel, and that it's saying that this brotherhood between that future nation of Israel, or this the birthright nations between America and Britain, and the Jewish state is going to exist. The fact that it says that there is going to be a break in the brotherhood also shows or implies that there will be a brotherhood. And if you look at the history of the Jewish state from 1948 onwards, it is the Americans and the British, though there has been some animosity, some bumps along the road, even as there was anciently, it's been the American and the British. And then even if you want to go further than that, Australia, Canada, again, part of ancient or part of Israel today, biblical Israel, they have been the ones that have supported the Jewish state more than any other state. There was a brotherhood in the end time, and yet that brotherhood is going to be broken. So really, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Mr. Trump says. It doesn't matter what Mrs. Clinton says. It doesn't matter who eventually fills the Oval Office. The damage of the past 7.5 years will not be recovered. It won't be. They might try and reinvigorate that relationship with some type of life, even some finances. But the sure word of Bible prophecy says that that relationship will be broken. And it will be broken again to the point that just as in the 8th century BC, Judah will go to Assyria for help. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be a war between America or Britain and Israel at all. What I am saying, though, is that relationship will be broken to the point that Israel has to go elsewhere for help. What we've seen over the past 70 years between Israel and America is not going to continue. America will not be the ally of choice for Israel any longer. That's what this scripture says right here in the book of Zechariah. Now, Trumpet editor Gerald Flory wrote about this specific prophecy back in 2004, and he said that this could be the prophecy of a rift between these two countries, one that would leave Judah or Israel today, very alone, very alone. Now, do you think that Israel today wants to go elsewhere for help? Do they want to find another ally? Or would they rather keep the United States? I'm pretty sure they would rather keep the United States. But that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen if Mr. Trump becomes president or if Mrs. Clinton becomes president. Now, relying on another prophecy in Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 2, Gerald Flurry also forecasts that after this break takes place, and it will be a break much more than we've seen even to this date, that East Jerusalem will likely fall to the forces of radical Islam, and that we're going to have a situation where Israel needs help because of that, and they're going to have to find another ally. This is what he wrote back in 2004. Gerald Flurry says, if the brotherhood between superpower America and the Jewish state is broken, that is probably when half of Jerusalem would be taken. So we can really see here that this breaking of the brotherhood between the two, between Israel and the United States, really is a watershed event that is going to embolden other nations and other peoples to fight against Israel and Jerusalem. And it's also going to cause Israel, by necessity, at least how they see in their with their own human reasoning, to find another ally. Of course, there would be an ally in God if they searched him out for help, to help them in their time of distress. But Bible indicates that they're not going to do that. But there is hope. If you want to, you can read on to chapter 12 of the book of Zechariah. It talks about how the house of David, King David, his family line is going to rule once again over Jerusalem in the future. And at that time, after the bands of brotherhood are broken between Israel and Judah, there will be a reunification, finally, of Israel and Judah once again. The nations will not be split. They will come under the leadership of one as he sits on that throne of David. Now, to understand more of these prophecies regarding Israel's future, and really so you can really understand exactly what's going to happen, you can know the timeline of end time events concerning Jerusalem that can give you comfort and that can motivate you to know that there is an end to this, then you can read Gerald Flurry's book, Jerusalem in Prophecy. Please request that at thetrumpet.com today. You can even find out more of who these nations are. You can even find out more about who the Assyrians are as well. And you'll likely be shocked by that, to see who Israel is going to go after and ask for help from. It's been good to be with you today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Again, this is kpcg.fm. And streaming online in Edmond, Oklahoma at 101.3 FM. Have a wonderful day.